Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we zero in on the Endangered Species Act and trumpeter swans. It's the Act's 40th anniversary this year, and every month we're doing a little feature on an endangered species. And this month, I think one of our species that probably is very popular and a lot of people consider it a real pleasure if they actually have to happen to see them, trumpeter swans. And a couple of guests have been, I don't know, the most active role you can imagine in bringing those swans back to the state of Wisconsin. Sumner Matteson is an avian biologist with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Sumner, nice to have you back. Thanks for being with us today. Appreciate it.
Pleasure to be here, Larry.
And Randy Jerowitz, who comes by and talks about a whole variety of things. He's recently retired wildlife ecologist, administrator with the DNR's Bureau of Endangered Resources. And Randy, great to see you again as well.
Always good to be here.
They're very popular, aren't they? I mean,
very much so. I mean, the two biggies, bald eagles and trumpeter swans, as when you see them, you know what you're looking at. That's the one thing you can, everybody can identify them and feel good about the fact that they're back here in Wisconsin.
Yeah. What's the history of the swans in the state? Maybe, Sumner, let me turn to you for that.
Sure, sure. Trumpeter swans were once fairly common throughout most of northern U.S. and Canada. Market gunning in the millinery trade rapidly depleted nesting populations back in the 19th century. And, for example, thousands of swan skins, mostly from trumpeter swans, were sent to Europe, where they were used to make ladies' powder puffs.
Huh.
The feathers also were used to adorn fashionable hats. The feathers were also used for quills, for writing. For example, John James Audubon was well known for his penchant for using trumpeter quills for his fine detail sketches. In 1932, there were only about 69 trumpeters that were documented in the Yellowstone, Montana, Idaho, Wyoming area.
Wow.
That was actually a horseback survey that occurred that year. In 1935, the U.S. government established the Red Rock Lakes National Wildlife Refuge, and the birds from Red Rock Lakes, about 40 of them, formed the core of the Midwest restoration effort back in the late 1960s. Minnesota got involved in about 1982, both the DNR and Hennepin Parks. Wisconsin then wrote a recovery plan in 1986 to establish a breeding and migratory flock of about 20 pairs. The good news, actually the great news, is that today we have nearly 200 nesting pairs.
Isn't that amazing? Here in Wisconsin.
Here in Wisconsin, 10 times the original recovery goal.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I understand that the eggs that we got to increase our population came from Alaska. And Randy, you hauled a bunch of those eggs back, didn't you?
I was in on every trip. We started flying to Alaska thanks to the Winway Corporation and Mary and Terry Kohler, who flew us up there. Very important to mention
the
fact that this project was based on the help from a lot of different partners, corporate, private, and the people in Wisconsin who donated to the Endangered Resources Fund, which is our primary funding source for the Bureau. But back in 1989 was our first flight, and we flew to Alaska every year from 89 through 97 and brought back 40, 50, 60 eggs, which was the genesis of the entire Wisconsin wolf. Got to tell you what's on my mind these days. Trumpeter swan population here. So we started at zero, and now we have, as Sumner mentioned, nearly 200 active nests.
And we actually, between 1989 and 1997, we collected 385 eggs, and about 92%, between 92 and 93% of those hatched out at the Milwaukee County Zoo, which was a major player in this.
Isn't that amazing? I think the first year tried something different with mute swans. That did not work, wasn't successful. And so then the very next year you got onto a really good program that obviously, it's fantastic results.
Yeah, 1987 and 88, we attempted to use mute swans to cross foster trumpeter swan eggs, and during that period we were waiting to go to Alaska, which we did in 1989, and then in 1989 to basically replace cross fostering as a technique, retired professor, wildlife ecology Stan Temple,
yes,
and his graduate student Becky Abel pioneered, along with Mike Mossman, Wisconsin DNR research biologist, a technique called decoy rearing, using a life-size decoy that swan cygnets that hatched out at the Milwaukee County Zoo imprinted upon, and then those birds were transferred up to sites in northern Wisconsin, beginning at the Crex Meadows Wildlife Area. And interns and Becky then used the decoy, a floating decoy, to take these cygnets out to loafing and feeding areas, basically raise these birds on the marsh throughout the summer. And they imprinted on the sites. The big question was, would these birds migrate? And that was the big question at the outset of the program. One of the reasons we went to Alaska was that these birds had proven migratory characteristics.
Yeah.
We were very pleased to discover that first year the birds migrated to a site 15 miles north of Dallas, Texas.
So yeah, that's amazing.
So we basically answered that question, that they could migrate.
And the other second question was, would they stop at Wisconsin on the way back, or
yeah,
would they just keep going north since they came from such a so far north? And they did. They came back to Wisconsin, Minnesota area.
And they've been doing it, and all their offspring have been doing it. You must feel like a grandpa or something here, a great-grandpa, with all the little swans that you've sort of fathered in a way.
Every single one. You feel a connection to it because when we handle them and band them and things nowadays, see the pictures that are up on the screen here, knowing that, you know, every single one of those was an egg.
Yeah,
that either Sumner or myself got out of a nest in Alaska. You know, their grandparents, if you will, were these eggs that we personally brought back to Wisconsin. So,
yeah,
yes,
it's, cool.
It's very gratifying.
It's actually a perfect segue into a story that occurred last fall in October. Back in the first week of October last year, I got an email from some folks in Burnett County that they saw this bird, and they had been following this bird, 82K. 82K was actually a bird that we were able to trace back. The egg for that bird was U2, collected in Alaska, the Minto Flats, at that time 22 years old.
Oh, 22.
Hatched out 1989, actually on my birthday, June 15th, Milwaukee County Zoo.
Great.
And so it was extremely gratifying to learn that bird had survived that long. But it also points up the importance of citizens reporting observations of trumpeter swans. And I can't say enough about the citizens of Wisconsin helping to restore trumpeters through observations and through financial support.
I've got to give the number for people to join in. If you have a question or comment, please feel free. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org. Or go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. We already have several photos of swans that people have sent in. You may have a photo to send in. Maybe you've got a question that you want to ask. And I hope that you will do that. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show. And let's take a call. John in Minocqua, we go to you. Hi, John. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I got a silly story about some trumpeter swans. It was the fall of the year, I don't know, a few years ago, and it was about 4 o'clock in the morning, and I heard a bunch of noise outside, about 12 of them, go out and look, and they're just out there squawking away, and the reason that they came down was because I have a white buoy, and they must have thought that they were going to pick him up, too, or whatever it was. So,
very cool.
Yeah.
So you sort of decoyed them in without realizing you were going to do that.
Yeah, that's kind of fun.
Oh, thanks for calling, John. Appreciate it. And they would do that, wouldn't they, Randy?
Yes, they're looking for buddies. either that or they're looking to, you know, kick that swan out of their territory. But at that time of year, they're probably just looking to be sociable.
Yeah, and they are they're kind of territorial once they get paired up, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
Yes, they're very territorial, especially in the spring and summer. They're much more social, if you will, gregarious in the fall. So you'll probably notice that they will be mixed in with other geese and swans in the wintertime. But, yeah, they're very territorial come spring.
Anne in Stevens Point, hi.
Hi there. Just want to let you know that one of your grandchildren showed up at our place this, 3 weeks ago.
Oh, good.
We put a wildlife scrape in where there was cornfield here, and we're in the process of planting native prairie. The grass has all been sprayed, so there's no much vegetation development, but I looked out there among the ducks, and here's a swan, and I said, holy cow, and sure enough, it was a first-year trumpeter swan. I got a great picture of it through my scope. And I was pretty excited. No neck collars, so it's some success there.
Oh, that's always great to hear, isn't it, Randy?
It is. It really is. Congratulations.
Thanks a lot for calling, Ann. Appreciate it. Well, it's always good to know that there's some more out there and some turning up. They're not banded. Judy in Reedstown, hi to you.
Yes. My question is, as with other endangered species, which the DNR has restored, like turkeys, sandhill cranes, and several others, will we eventually need to have another hunting season to manage the trumpeter swans after we bring them back?
Probably not too likely.
Well, I don't think so. There's, I guess the operative word there, Judy, is need to. There are most game animals... we harvest because we can, not necessarily because we need to. You know, we don't mm-hmm. need to harvest rabbits and squirrels, except maybe out of your backyard bird mm-hmm. feeders, perhaps. But, you know, game management is based on the premise that there's a surplus produced that we can harvest, you know, successfully and without any harm to the original population. The recent developments and the possibility of a sandhill crane season, people are saying that we need to do that because they're doing so much damage. Same thing with a wolf hunt that's coming up. We can handle depredation in other ways besides having a hunt. I think we should justify having hunting seasons based on the fact that there's a surplus that we can harvest, you know, successfully and safely. All that being said, and given the fact that trumpeter swans are, you know, successfully and safely hunted in other parts of the country, personally, I hope we never have a season here in Wisconsin.
There you go.
Well, I do, too, and I think some of this imposes a great inconvenience on landowners that have substantial acreage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With the hunting seasons, you get, unfortunately, the hunters, and some of them don't behave as well as the birds.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Thank you, Judy, for calling. Appreciate your call. We had an email from Shane in Port Wing. I've seen two pairs of trumpeter swans in the Port Wing Harbor area three times in the last couple of weeks. Are they here for the summer, or are they migrating through, do you think? Sumner, what do you think?
I think that... they are probably birds that are not breeding. Probably, I would think that they're through with their migration, but birds that may be just checking out the area as they wander about. At this time of the year, most of the birds are back on territory, so they're not likely breeding, but could be there for the summer.
Yeah. And as we think, you know, we had 200 pairs here, as we're looking at their distribution across the state, kind of where are, I mean, are they in all parts of this north, south, east, west? Are they pretty much?
Or? We have birds nesting in 24 counties, but about 45%, actually 47% of our nesting population is in two counties, Burnett and Polk County.
Okay.
We also have a good core population in the northern counties, also in the central Sands area. We have a pair nesting in southeastern Wisconsin. We have a handful also in the southwestern part of the state.
Okay. Sumner Madison is an avian biologist with the DNR. Randy Jerwitz, recently retired wildlife ecologist, administrator of the Wisconsin DNR's Bureau of Endangered Resources, our guest today as we talk about trumpeter swans. Give us a call with your questions or comments, or maybe you've got a story to share at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. And if you got a fun photo or another question, you could also use our Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening in on the Ideas Net, talking trumpeter swans with Sumner Madison and Randy Jerwitz. And Mike in Presque Isle has been waiting a while, so let's go to Mike. Hi, Mike. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
Good morning.
Okay. I'm very happy to kneel here at the feet of the masters, the fount of all swan knowledge, because we're stumped up here in Presque Isle.
Okay.
April 1st, and this, I assure you it's not a joke, my wife and I were traveling, driving past a local lake, a sizable lake, Horsehead, and we spotted a flock of swans swimming on the water along a weed line. We had had many tundra swans in the weeks prior to this flying overhead, as many as 39 individuals, and they are common in the neighborhood, but these were not those. They had the bright white body that you see on all swans, about 15 individuals, black necks entirely from the chest all the way to and including the head, solid black. Every individual looked like that. They were uniform. And we have our crack local naturalist up here, John Bates, has been stumped by this one. And so are we. They were there that morning about 10:15 and later vanished. Right. In this crazy warm spring, without migration patterns and things, have you heard about a flock of swans looking like this?
And John Bates is pretty sharp, knows what he's talking about, that's for sure. I'm sure Randy and Sumner know John, but...
Yeah, hey, John, yeah. Well.
any ideas, guys?
I've not heard or seen any reports similar to what you just described. Did you say that the entire neck was black and as well as the head?
The entire neck, up to and including the head. There were no cheek patches or markings. Solid black, and all these individuals were uniformly colored the same way.
Mm-hmm. And how long were they in the area?
We saw the as. To my knowledge, I saw them. To my knowledge, we saw them once on that lake. We came back from church 2 hours later, and they were gone by noon.
Are there any game farms nearby?
None that I'm aware of. I was thinking perhaps some exotic bird keeper might have lost some, but about 15 individuals all in a flock. You know, I might think a couple. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have three species of swans in Wisconsin. We have the mute swan, we have the tundra and the trumpeter, and of course the tundra and trumpeter have the white necks, black bills. The mute has an orange bill, black fleshy knob, but of course none of them have the all black neck and head. And the only swan I can think of is a black swan, and it sounds to me like the only thing this possibly could be is these birds might have escaped from a game farm.
Okay. One possibility, and I'm not going to swear this is it because you'll think I'm crazy, but as I checked the Sibley book and I saw three North American swans, and none looked like this. As I went to the computer to do a little more checking, the word black-necked swan popped into my mind, possibly from years ago when I worked in the staff of Ducks Unlimited magazine. I went ahead and looked into that. There are birds like that, but they're southern South America. And my wife took a look at the photos at a distance that they were showing, and she said, that's what they look like, and that's what I was thinking. I know it sounds crazy, but that's the only thing I've seen online that looked anything like these birds, and it looked exactly like them. So
well, I'm wondering if you could send me those photographs. I'd like to take a look at them.
From the website? I did not shoot these. So
did anybody take any pictures of them at all?
Not that I know
of. Okay.
That's
okay.
Too bad.
Okay.
Yeah, that's, black-necked swan, that would be quite a coup, Randy.
Well, yes, but, game farms buy and sell and trade in all kinds of exotic wildlife. And fences are never perfect, so...
Yeah, it could be a whole flock.
It's possible.
Yeah, possible. There you go, Mike. Thank you for calling. Appreciate your call. I wish we had a definitive answer, but we don't. Someone, Dan, wanted you to talk about the trumpeter versus the muted swans and how we can tell them apart. And you did talk just a little bit about that just now, Sumner, but maybe to reiterate that a bit.
Yes, the mute swan is an introduced Eurasian species, orange bill, black fleshy knob, really distinguishes that from both the tundra and the trumpeter. In fact, if you see them out on a water body, you cannot misidentify a mute swan. It's very, very distinctive. Most of our mute swans are in southeastern Wisconsin. We have some in the north, a few in the central part of the state. As the name would imply, it does not have a vocalization, but it does not have anything that is very distinctive and memorable. The trumpeter has a as the name would suggest, a trumpet-like sonorous vocalization. I should say the tundra swan has a higher pitched quavering vocalization, sometimes compared to the baying of hounds, whoops and hollers. But mute swan is certainly very distinctive. It has a classical S, kind of an S-shaped look to its neck when it's on the water, but very easily distinguished from trumpeters.
Jill in Duluth, Minnesota. Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for calling. What is on your mind?
Well, thank you. I just had a question. How on earth, and I apologize if you talked about this earlier, I missed the beginning of your conversation, but how on earth do you take eggs off a trumpeter's nest? I worked as a zookeeper for many years, and we had a pair of black swans that would periodically lay eggs, and my lord, they would beat the crap out of you if you came anywhere near them. So how do you do that without some serious bruising?
Yeah, Randy, you did it for several years in Alaska, so...
Nine different trips, yes. I guess the thing is that... with these wild birds, and you're talking about the middle of Alaska, there aren't even any roads for 100 miles, let alone any people. Some of these birds probably had never seen anybody near them. And when we use the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service float plane to fly in and get close to these, land on these little ponds and get close to these things, almost invariably the adults... although they did complain vocally, they just moved off the nest.
Oh, so they never came at you or anything?
Well, a couple times they did, and once they even hit the plane and knocked off the communications antenna off the plane. But by and large,
because they're an extremely strong bird. I know we used to have to do, in the early days of lead poisoning, we were doing different ways of chelating wild trumpeters. And one knocked my boss out cold just when an elbow got loose and knocked him back and knocked him in the forehead, and out he went.
So exactly. And trumpeter swans, and people should be very careful around them in springtime when they are setting up their territories and protecting their nest. But when we were up there collecting eggs, they were fairly calm and would let us... of course, we're approaching the nest in a great big float plane. So we kind of intimidated them with the plane. For the most part, tried to actually have the pontoon just come right up against the nest, and then either Sumner or myself would jump out onto the nest and collect the eggs, always leaving two viable eggs behind so that the native Alaska birds would have something to raise.
Okay, so they never abandoned nests or anything like that afterwards?
No, no. And it was very important that Fish and Wildlife Service did follow-up surveys to document the fact that we were not having an impact on the reproduction of those nests, that by the end of the season, those nests usually raised 2 trumpeter swans. They may start with 5, 6, 7, but they would fledge 2. And if we only left 2, they would fledge 2. So that's very successful. They're better at raising, you know, just a few of them. And so we did not have an impact on the population.
Just to add to what Randy said, what we discovered in those 9 years and also what we've seen here in Wisconsin is a great deal of variability, a great deal of variation in behaviors from adults. Some will stand their ground, be quite protective of the eggs. Others will, once you approach them, will get off the nest and be 100 or more yards away from the nest. So a great deal of variation in the behavior of the adults.
Well, but thank you very much.
But when they are aggressive, they can be very,
very, very aggressive.
Very protective.
I can imagine. I think I still have the scars to prove it.
Thanks, Jill.
Thank you.
Yeah, you too. Have a great day. Thank you for calling. And we have, by the way, Joel in Superior says tundra swans are hunted in many states and Canada, but trumpeters are federally protected. So I'm sure if they're federally protected or not, but Joel thinks they are. We had a...
In the Midwest, yes.
In the Midwest, okay. Possible ID for the dark neck swan. Caller from Amory said that he has seen trumpeters stand on a log but dip their head and necks into feed, and the polluted water stains their feathers over time.
Actually, what you often see is a kind of an orangish cast to the neck, and that's from the contact with the bottom sediments as they're searching for potamogeton seeds, pondweed seeds. So as their head and neck come in contact with the bottom substrate, they come in contact with that ferrous oxide, and then you have that sort of stained look that you get on the trumpeter neck.
You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Your questions or comments or maybe experiences with our swans, our trumpeter swans. Todd in Portage, it's your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yeah, it's Don.
Oh, Todd, sorry.
No, Donald.
Oh, Donald, sorry.
There you go. Yeah, I had an experience as a young lad. I was 19 years old and worked on a ranch in Montana just outside of the northwest corner of Yellowstone Park. And in the spring of 1950, where I was coming in to the ranch, I was up on the Taylor Forks of the Gallatin River, and I came around this little bend in the road, and there was one of those magnificent birds in the road right in front of me. And, of course, I caught it off guard, and it started to take off, and it came to altitude alongside of the Taylor Fork. And as it gained, you could see the Spanish peaks in the background, all snow-covered and so forth. It was a very impressionable picture I still carry in my mind, and I worked there 2 years, and that's the only time I ever saw one. If you look, we're located in that part of the Idaho and that part of Montana at that time, but very few.
That's a great story. Thank you very much for calling.
Well, thank you for that.
Great story. Randy, what's your favorite experience that you've had with trumpeter?
Wow. I guess when the first 2 years that we collected eggs up in Alaska, we literally went up there with suitcases and hot water bottles. And... those trips were very quick. We flew up one day, collected eggs the next day, and then flew back that night. Terry Kohler, again, was the pilot for us. He would sleep during the day and fly us home all night long. And we would fly on the way back, we would fly as low as possible, and we would be stopping for fuel and to replace the hot water in the hot water bottles. And going into some of these small, private airports, and prior to the trip, we would call them up. We would ask them, what is the temperature of their hot water? And we would pick and choose the airports that we'd fly into based on how hot their hot water was, trying to keep these eggs alive from Alaska back to Wisconsin. So those first couple trips were pretty Spartan, I guess, in terms of the, plus it was a long 24 hours to be collecting and then flying and keeping the eggs alive. After those first two trips, Terry Kohler had one of his companies develop essentially it was a mobile incubator with a internal heat source and cooling.
Oh, man.
And it plugged into a 12-volt system. So we plugged it into the plane. We plugged it into the truck. And it was perfect. But those first trips were very memorable, just being these hot water babysitters.
Oh, man, that's a great, great story. Michael in Green Bay, I think, has a story to tell. So let's go there. Hi, Michael.
Well, hi there. Yeah, this story is actually relating to my father. And I won't say where he's from because he'd probably be embarrassed if he knew I was telling the
okay.
Grandson about the story. But I felt that it was very relevant to the conversation. He works for the United States Forest Service.
Okay.
And he was planting wild rice in a lake as part of his job in the springtime. And he had noticed a large group of trumpeter swans on the other side of the lake. And he noticed that one of them was taking off, and he didn't think anything of it, but he should have because it flew at him as fast as it could with its feet out, knocked him down in the water with his chest plates on, took him underwater, latched onto his arm, and he was wrestling with it underwater while his chest plates were completely full of water.
Wow.
And he barely got able to stand up, and he was dragging it on the shore, and it was still attacking him. He finally, you know, after he, I guess, you know, hit it a couple times in self-defense, it let go, but it kept coming back after him. And he just never, I remember he said he never knew that they were that territorial. And I think after, you said in the springtime that they were especially territorial.
Yeah. He was, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, and he said it just followed him around the rest of the day. Like, it was kind of, I mean, I don't think it wanted to attack him anymore, but he said everywhere he went the rest of the day around that lake, it followed him around.
Was this in Wisconsin, Michael?
Yes, in northern Wisconsin.
Yep.
That is quite a story.
It really is. Fortunately, it's rare. It's a rare occurrence, but they do get territorial. We had questioned whether some of our captive raising techniques would contribute to that, but we never did find a difference between the birds that we kept over winter and released then, and decoy reared, versus the decoy rearing technique.
Michael, when did this happen? What year was this?
Oh, wow. This had to have happened at least a decade ago.
Yeah, I want to say that we have not seen cases like this recently. We had a few cases where we did have some of the early birds that were released being hyper aggressive, but as the population has matured, those behaviors have dissipated, have virtually disappeared. Not to say that they can't be aggressive at a nest, but those kinds of occasions that you just described did occur from time to time. Fortunately, they weren't numerous, but we no longer see that kind of aggressive behavior these days.
Well, yeah. I think also he said that there was a DNR tag on the bird, the one that did. And it seems like people at the Forest Service have bad luck, because I know another story where a trumpeter swan jumped on a snowmobile with a Forest Service worker.
Yeah, what we've seen throughout the life of the program over 25 years is that, especially if you feed them, and people are often excited to do so because they want to see the birds up close, some of these birds can tame down. And the process of taming down, they become much more aggressive, hyper-aggressive during the breeding season, during the nesting season. So that's why we try to discourage folks from feeding them. It could be that some of those birds that were involved in those cases were birds that were captive, reared, released. Because we've not seen that kind of behavior in recent years.
I think that's exactly what it was. Because those birds, they were just, like, introduced into the area.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, because otherwise I don't think he said that anybody's ever had a problem with them since. And that, you know, they're such beautiful birds, you know, you hate to give them a bad name.
Yeah, that's the advantage of having a long program like this. We're able to see different kinds of behaviors. We're able to see birds reacting in different situations. And so I think that through the course of the program, we've been able to see that basically we've got wild birds out there behaving as we'd want them to.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling, Michael.
Well, thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Maureen and McQuanigo, hi to you.
Hi. I was wondering if Randy and Sumner could explain the three different methods that were used for reintroduction into the state. I think the public might have been only aware of the decoy rearing since that was the only one mentioned.
Yes. Well, we had some great people working with us over the years, you being one of them.
It's Maureen Gross calling in. Maureen was very important to the program. She, for many years, how many years was it, Maureen, that you helped take care of the birds at the General Electric Medical Systems?
10 years.
Well, 1 year was spent at Phantom Lake doing the cross-fostering. But I was wondering if you could explain to the public what the different methods were and what the success rate.
Right. So we talked about decoy rearing. Captive rearing is where we take the birds from, take the cygnets from the Milwaukee County Zoo after they were hatched out. And we took them initially at 3 weeks. Later, we took that down to 1 week, put them out at the General Electric Medical Systems facility near Pewaukee. They were raised until they were about 2 years of age. They were then released up at selected sites in northern and central Wisconsin. The third technique is called captive parent rearing. And we had about five cooperators that had captive pairs of trumpeter swans. Those birds then produced young. We took those young when they were about 1 year of age and then released them up in central and northern Wisconsin. One of the longest-running partners for that effort was BP Amoco near Naperville, Illinois. They produced about 12 yearlings for us.
Hmm.
As far as the percentage of the population, about 50% of our current population is comprised of decoy-reared birds, birds that were in the decoy rearing program. Another 40% were from the captive reared birds, and then captive parent rearing represented about 8%.
So there we go. And Maureen, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Randy and Sumner, great fun talking with you today. And actually, up on my Facebook page, if you go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, you can click on, there's something called Trumpeter Swan from the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, and you'll learn a whole lot more about the program. And actually, Sumner's got a nice paper he wrote with Pat Manthe. Is that up on that site?
I can check.
Yeah, check that out. It'd be great to have that up there. Thanks, guys. I hope we can have a chance to talk again.
Thank you very much. And also, just want to quickly mention that the Natural Resources Foundation of Wisconsin was very instrumental in providing funding for this program.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Sumner Madison, an avian biologist with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Randy Jerwitz, recently retired wildlife ecologist and administrator with the DNR's Bureau of Endangered Resources. Great to have them with us, and I hope we have them a chance to have them back again. Seeing a trumpeter swan in the wild, a real treat. Our guest coming up gets to see and experience a lot in nature, and most of us just read about or see what he's seen in person. Kenny Solway, the last river rat, he's here to share stories of his life and lessons he's learned living close to nature. Stay tuned. That's coming up next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.